WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Man, oh man, does the week fly by. TGIF, yes, it is Friday, February 13th. Welcome to Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. Man, do we have a stacked show today. I'm certainly excited to bring it to you, folks. We will talk about the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame ceremony that took place yesterday downtown Detroit at Motor City Casino inside of the Soundboard Theater. Alex Shark and myself were there to witness all of the hoopla that ensued last night. Tom Izzo, yes, the most famous person in Lansing, he was inducted. You'll get to hear his entire induction speech, folks. We'll also talk with Doug English, former Detroit Lion great, also Alita Sill, who was one unbelievable bowler, actually the only bowler to crack the $1 million earning mark. How about that? You'll get to hear from all of those individuals, and you'll get to hear our whole experience from last night, which was a fun one to say the least. We'll also talk about Michigan men's basketball as they took a tough loss to Illinois last night in overtime. Is the NIT inevitable for this team? We'll also give you a preview of the Michigan State and Ohio State men's basketball game, chat about Tiger Woods, and bring Reflection Friday to you. All of that and so much more. But let's start the show like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this February 13th. All right, folks, well, let's start with the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame last night. Yankees legend Derek Jeter, will have to wait a year to be inducted into the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame. The retired shortstop couldn't attend the ceremony at the Motor City Casino Soundboard Theater due to, quote, serious plane issues. Now, Jeter will be a part of the 2016 class, along with former Red Wing Mike Modano. Now, the rest of the evening went out as planned with MSU men's basketball coach Tom Izzo, Red Ring great Sergei Fedorov, former Lion Doug English, Cincinnati Reds shortstop Barry Larkin, bowling great Alita Sill, and Olympic gold medalist Shelia Tormina, all being inducted in the 2015 class. And we were there, folks, give you coverage of that in just a sec, so hold tight. All right, Eastern High School has announced that six individuals and one team will be inducted into its Athletic Hall of Fame later this month. Now, the class includes former MSU All-American swimmer Dennis Hill, former Purdue basketball player Herb Robinson, former MLB player Bob Strager, multi-sport athlete Paul Stein, swimming national record holder Alec Mull, athletics volunteer Greg Gorgon, and Quakers 1954 wrestling state championship team. How about that? Now, the ceremony will be held on February 27th at Don Johnson Fieldhouse. That's going to be a hot ticket, folks. All right. The University of Michigan men's basketball team fell to the Fighting Illini. That's right, Illinois, in overtime, 64-52 Thursday night. Now, the Wolverines held a 7-point lead with 4 minutes in the game, but the offense completely stalled. The Wolverines dropped to 13-12 overall and 6-7 in the Big Ten Conference. Spike Albrick led U of M with 13 points. The Detroit Tigers received good news on the injury front. Victor Martinez had successful surgery to repair a torn meniscus and is expected to only miss 4 to 6 weeks. Now, this is on the quick side of recovery time for this type of procedure. The 36-year-old injured his knee earlier this month during an off-season workout, but he is on track to be ready for opening day if all goes well. Let's knock on wood, all right? All right, the first female beat writer in MLB history, Allison Gordon, sadly passed away on Thursday morning. The 72-year-old died after being hospitalized for a lung ailment. Now, Gordon faced many incidents as a sports journalist, including during the 1979 season when the Texas Rangers banned all reporters from entering the home clubhouse rather than allowing Gordon in. Wow. Now, despite many similar incidents, Gordon worked the beat for the Toronto Blue Jays for five seasons. Talk about resiliency, huh? All right, the NBA All-Star Weekend kicks off tonight with the All-Star Celebrity Game taking place at 7 p.m. Comedian Kevin Hart, Anthony Anderson, actor, who's an actor, and former NBA players Allen Houston, Chris Mullin, will headline the list of participants. Afterwards, the annual rookie versus sophomore game will be played with a twist. This year's game features a new format with the league's top U.S.-born prospects challenging the top international prospects. I kind of like that twist. Now, the three-point and dunk contest highlights Saturday night's festivities beginning at 8:30 p.m., and the All-Star game itself takes place on Sunday at 8:30 p.m. And how about this? It's going to be a pretty cool moment. In honor of its 50th anniversary, Gatorade is bringing back one of its most famous ads. Do you guys remember the Be Like Mike commercial? I mean, I still have the tune ringing through my head to this day. It features Michael Jordan after he won his first NBA championship, and it will be aired this weekend during the 2015 NBA All-Star Game. Now, the commercial first aired, fittingly, 23 years ago, which of course is MJ's historic number. All right, and last but certainly not least, former New York Knick Anthony Mason is still fighting for his life after having congestive heart failure that led to multiple surgeries, but his condition has improved slightly. Now, Mason's agent Don Cronson gave an update about the former Knick's condition. Cronson said, quote, right now it's day to day, but that's an improvement from moment to moment, end quote. All right, thoughts and prayers out to Anthony Mason. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, please call at 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. All right, folks, and also, you know, we're going to go with caller number one today. Caller number one who calls in on today's current sports will win a pair of tickets to go and witness the Michigan State men's basketball game tomorrow as they take on the Ohio State Buckeyes. So if you want to win those tickets, if you want something to do for Valentine's Day, hey, that's a great date. How about just going and witnessing some basketball, folks? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 is the number to call so you can win those tickets. All right, folks. Well, I want to start the show by, of course, talking about the night that was at Detroit's Motor City Casino last night at the Soundboard Theater. It was a fun time. Alex and I actually made the drive out there downtown Detroit to witness one unbelievable Hall of Fame ceremony. Now, I had previously covered the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame. This is about 2 years ago when I was still a reporter at Channel 6 News. I remember going down there. I stayed only briefly, though, because we had to get some things on for the 6 o'clock and the 11 o'clock news. So I couldn't stay for the whole time. But I had the privilege last night of staying for the entire ceremony from start to finish. We actually arrived around 4:30 p.m. downtown at the casino, and we were there from to about 10 p.m. till that's around roughly when the ceremony ended. So it was so cool being down there and being able to witness firsthand and to meet all of these legends in sports, because not only were the inductees there, but of course there were a lot of personnel that were associated with those inductees, whether it be players, whether it be coaches. And I'll get to some of the specifics and highlights for me and players and coaches that I got a chance to meet for the first time. It was so cool just being down there witnessing that atmosphere. But again, we were down there, so we have full coverage of it, folks. You'll actually get to see my entire report on the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame on WKAR.org over the weekend. So keep it locked on my Twitter page at Al Martin WKAR, as I will be tweeting out that report over the weekend. So you don't want to miss that. Also, I'll even put it on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, so all of you who are on Facebook get to see that report as well. But I want to start the show by, of course, highlighting three individuals who we talked to firsthand, inductees who we talked to when we were down there. We tried to get to all of them, but it was such a media scrum. It was pretty much impossible to talk to every inductee that came through. And I am bummed. I will say I am bummed, because one of the biggest reasons why I was really, really excited about this, not only because of Tom Izzo getting inducted to the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame, but because of also Derek Jeter. I mean, Derek Jeter is one of the greatest baseball players of all time. Seeing his whole farewell tour that he went on in his last year of baseball, everywhere he went, he was showered with gifts, and the constant recounts of individuals talking about his greatness, the Michael Jordan commercial that Mike put together for him. I mean, it was such a big hoopla, and just really a testament to the captain. I mean, he's such a staple in Yankees history. And I, you know, when it was announced that Derek will be inducted into this year's class, I said, oh, whoa. I got to meet this guy. I got to go down there and talk to DJ and get that interview for all of you out there and for all my own personal reasons as well. I mean, Derek Jeter, one of the greatest of all time, right? But again, as you heard in our Quick Hit headliners, his plane had some serious mechanical problems and he could not make the trip into Detroit to be a part of the ceremony. But he has made a commitment that he will be there for next year's ceremony. So, you know, I guess I got to start definitely planning for that right now, right? But, yeah, you don't want to take the air if you're having mechanical issues with the plane, okay? So it was a safe move, even though a lot of folks were kind of bummed out, including myself. Hey, in due time, patience is certainly a virtue, okay? But it was certainly one incredible class. I mean, folks, we're talking about from the likes of Sergei Fedorov, who is a former Detroit Red Wing great, unbelievable player. Alina Sill, who a Dearborn native, who, again, is the only woman to win more than $1 million in her career. That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable as a bowler, folks. Barry Larkin, of course, the great baseball player Barry Larkin, who took his talents to U of M right out of high school. And then, you know, Shelia Termina, who I'm going to save my rant for her in just a sec, because Shelia, I mean, I didn't know how great she was until they did that whole video tribute and actually kind of went through her career and talked about all of the sports that she participated in, not at the amateur level, folks. We're talking about at the Olympic level. I mean, it was certainly remarkable to see the video montage that they put together and to hear her story firsthand. Doug English, of course, former Detroit Lion great, and last but certainly not least, the great Tom Izzo. So to start off, I actually want to start off with Doug English. Doug, of course, was drafted by the Lions out of the University of Texas in the second round in 1975. Now, he helped anchor the, quote, Silver Rush defensive line for 10 seasons until his retirement in 1985, with the exception of the 1980 season that he sat out due to injuries. Now, for his career, get this, he totaled 131 games, played with 59 sacks, good for sixth on the all-time Lions list, and had four safety. That's unbelievable, folks. Now, he was named to four Pro Bowls, recorded 12 sacks, helped lead the Lions to the Central Division title. That took place in 1983 when he had 12 sacks and that Central Division title. He also was named to three All-Pro teams. He was the Detroit Lions defensive MVP in 1979 and named to the Lions' 75th anniversary all-time team back in 2008. So we got the privilege of stealing a bit of Doug's time. And I first had to start by asking Doug, how in the world does it feel to be a Hall of Famer?
Well, you know, yeah, it's a tribute. I mean, it's something that I feel like I don't deserve. If anything, it gives me a chance to credit the coaches and the mentors that came into my life at the right time that helped me be here. And furthermore, maybe inspire some other people to mentor some young people and do and say the right things, and so that other young people will have the same good opportunities that I did.
Now, when you first started playing the game, I mean, the word Hall of Fame holds a lot of weight. I mean, what goes to your head? I mean, being enshrined, and what does this night mean for you?
Well, again, the tonight is a tribute to the coaches. It's a tribute to the men that helped me. And you take any one of those coaches out of my life, and we're not having this conversation. Somebody else is here. And be able to do it in the state of Michigan, which is a wonderful state. I mean, the most resilient people, the people that have the high highs and the lowest lows, and have always worked through it and always stayed together and persevered. What a better statement is that? And to be able to be enshrined in this state with this type of attitude and be able to spend the time I got to spend here with these people, it's a great honor.
Doug, one of the things that I love when I come to Hall of Fame ceremonies is seeing you guys take the podium and deliver your speeches. What will the overall message be of your speech tonight?
Well, thanks for telling me. I wasn't aware I was going to be making remarks. You know, you don't always, because some of these guys eat up 4 hours, you know, in total if you give them the microphone.
Right.
But, yeah, I will be brief, first of all. Okay. And I'm sure it'll be have a lot to do with what we just talked about, that I am a product of great coaching, and I am. And you take any of those coaches away, and I'm not here. And so that's what it's all about.
Yes, again, folks, that's Doug English, a Detroit Lion great, folks. It was great chatting with him. But I also got the chance to chat with Alita Steele. Now, I had no idea how intriguing also Alita Steele's story was because, I mean, I tell you what, I don't know much about bowling. But, I mean, once again, her video tribute was on the board, and I started to read upon her story. My jaw hit the floor. I mean, it was truly remarkable. Now, she's a Dearborn native. She won her first bowling tournament at, get this, the age of 19. How about that? Now, she won the WIBC Queens Tournament and led the PBT in earnings in 1983 to 1986. Now, she led the women's tour in winnings from 1993 to 1994 and won the U.S. Open in 94 and 98. She's the only bowler to win the women's triple crown not once, but twice. Miguel Cabrera, eat your heart out, okay? Now, in 1999, she became the first woman to win more than $1 million in her career. She ranked second all-time with 31 tournament wins and third in winnings with, get this, $1,071,000. Roughly around there. So $1,071,000. That is unbelievable. Unbelievable. So we actually got a chance. We actually ran into Alita as she was, you know, going around signing autographs, and we stole a bit of her time. Here she is.
Well, I mean, it's like the icing on the cake for me to be in the Michigan, the Sports Hall. Not only in my sport, but to be in Sports Hall of Fame is the icing on the cake.
How did you get the call?
I didn't. He came and told me. It was the first time he's ever been able to do it in person. Jim Stark came to my pro shop, and he said, I have some good news for you. And I said, oh, yeah, what's that? Because I didn't know who he was. And he said, you've just been elected into the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame. And I, like it didn't, I'm, like, staring at him for a minute. It's like I'm processing it in my head and went, oh, my God. And I ran around the corner, and I hugged him. So, yeah, it was amazing.
Now, for you, I mean, looking at your illustrious career, do you have a favorite memory or two that really stands out in your mind? I know it's hard to choose.
Well, probably going over, being the first to go over the million mark, because our prize funds were so small. So I had to bowl good for a long time to be able to do that. So that's probably was the career highlight, is being the first to make $1 million bowling.
For you, Alita, I mean, do you kind of see yourself because a lot of people do, see yourself as a pioneer for the sport of bowling? And what is that like?
Well, yeah, I mean, at least it gives girls hope now, you know, that they can be successful and make a living. I made a decent living bowling. So, I mean, it's something that you can strive for. And now they've brought it to our tour, folded back in 2003. I had retired in 2001, and 2 years later it folded. So they're bringing it back this year, the new PWBA. So that's going to be great for the girls.
That is fantastic. And you know, one of the things I love about coming to Hall of Fame events like this is getting to hear the speeches when you guys do go up there. Now, I'm just making sure you will be making a speech, right?
Yeah, I will. That's not my favorite part of this thing, but yeah, I'll be.
So what's going to be the overall message? If you can just give us kind of a preview when you take that podium, what's the overall message of your speech?
First of all, thanking the committee for voting me in and the people that are here with me. I'm just going to let them know what I'm doing now. You know, I've reflected on how I started and who'd have thought, you know, all these years later after throwing gutter balls for, you know, my grandparents telling me you better keep it on the lane or you're not going to bowl anymore. So
right. That
was my goal, is to keep bowling, so keep it on the lane.
Right.
But and then I have an event that I'm going to share with everybody that I'm passionate about, helping animals in need. And so I want people to be aware of my foundation, charity that is close to my heart.
That is fantastic. And also, Alita, last question. I mean, when you look at the class that you're being inducted with, I mean, Tom Izzo, Barry Larkin, Derek Jeter, I mean, wow. I mean, what goes to your head when you think about that?
It just doesn't get better than that. And some people were saying, well, yeah, you should have been in a while ago. And I'm going, yeah, but I'm not going to get to go in with Derek Jeter and Tom Izzo then. So I'm quite happy with right now.
Have you got a chance to meet and talk to him at all?
I've talked and met Tom. I haven't met anybody else yet here, though. But Tom was just a great guy. And it's just an honor to be mentioned with these guys.
Right.
And Sheila and the girl. Yeah.
How about that, folks? Alita Steele, she was such a sweetheart. Again, the first woman to win more than $1 million in her career. And it's funny, looking back at that interview now, that was actually about an hour before we got the news that Derek Jeter wouldn't be able to make the trip. So, yeah, Alita and I, we were both looking forward to that. Oh, come on, DJ. You messed up our plans, man. But anyway, all right, here's a man who needs no introduction, of course, Tom Izzo, head men's basketball coach right here at Michigan State University, born and raised in Iron Mountain, and was named high school All-State. Now, at Northern Michigan University, he was named as a Division II All-American as a senior. He began coaching in 1978 at Ishpeming High School, assistant coach at NMU for 4 years before moving to MSU. In 1990-91, he was named assistant head coach by Judd Heathcote, became head coach in 1995, has led the Spartans to one national championship, six NCAA regional championships, seven Big Ten championships, four Big Ten tourney titles, two NCAA championship games, eight Elite Eights, 12 Sweet 16, and 17 NCAA tourney bids. Wow, that's a mouthful. He's a man who needs no introduction, but I'm giving one anyway. Now, he was also named as the AP National Coach of the Year back in 1998, the Henry Eba Award in 1998 also, and Big Ten Coach of the Year in 98, 2009, and 2012. We got some time one-on-one with Tom, but I'm not going to play that again. You'll have to catch the report this weekend for that one. I want to play his induction speech because it was a great one, to say the least. Here's Tom hitting the podium.
This is an honor, and there are so many people to thank, but Jim, of course, you and the committee, and it's incredible to be here. You know, I've got a camera on me and a pen. I'm not coming here as an honoree. I'm coming here as a fan. You know, I want autographs myself. I got a chance to watch just about everybody play and do their thing. You know, when you're a coach, it's a little different than being a player. Players earn the right to be in Hall of Fames, which means as a coach, you're part of that team that the team has to play well for you to get into the Hall of Fame. And what better way than the 125 or 30 guys I've coached? I hope each and every one of them take a little bit from this night that they got me here. You know, I never shot a free throw. Right now, I think I could beat some of my guys, but I never shot a free throw. I don't take a charge. I don't get a rebound. Sometimes we just sit there in our suits. But it was interesting listening to Doug talk about, you know, what coaches meant. And that's really what I'm doing tonight. I'm here to thank all the people that have helped me. You know, it's my coaches from high school. I got a representative from Northern Michigan, the college I went to, along with Lloyd Carr. And I've got so many people that came from East Lansing, fellow coaches at Michigan State. Our booster club brought a bunch of people down. I want to thank all them. But yet, you know, for me, Judd Heathcote meant a lot to me. He did a lot for me. I learned everything but to bang my head. I value my health too much. I appreciate what he did. My best friend in the world, Steve Mariucci, still a guy that pushes me each and every day. So I look at all these people, we're role models. I look at these guys, we're role models. And I think the great thing about being a coach, the only thing that bothers me right now, I'm still working while you guys are all retired. You know, you guys get to go your own direction. And Saturday, although, Sergey, it's good to know you got a little pressure on you over in Russia. I'm kind of happy about that, too. But I want to especially thank my family. I've been blessed that I've gotten a chance to be in the Hall of Fame when I'm still alive. But I'm really blessed that my parents are. And my parents are, I'll say, in their late 80s. And they're both here. My wife, Lupi, has been so supportive in a job that, you know, you're raising other kids and sometimes not your own as much, and she does an incredible job of that. My son and daughter, Raquel and Steven, are also here, and I appreciate that, along with some relatives that came up. So I'm just here to say thank you, Jim, for giving me one of the greatest thrills of my life. Unlike maybe some people, I've been born in this state. I live in this state. I love this state. I love Detroit. I love all the things about it. I watch every sport from baseball, football, basketball. I'm going to become, you know, a bowling fan, and I've always been a decathlon or a, you know, pentathlon fan. I have respect for those people. So I kind of covered the gambit here, and I love all of you, and I hope that before I'm done We bring another championship back to this great state, and we're going to work hard to do it. Thank you very much.
Ah, yes, Tom Izzo, always classy and always well-spoken. Also, a few punchlines in there as well. Oh, boy. What a time it was. Again, that's the raw audio from our coverage last night down at Motor City Casino inside of the Soundboard Theater for the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame. What a class. What a fun time it was. I now want to bring in, of course, the man behind the glass, Alex Sharg, who also accompanied me down there for all of that coverage and so much more. Alex, how you doing, my man?
Pretty good, pretty good. A little tired today. We got out of that late last night. We didn't get out of there until about, what, 10?
Yeah, we left around 10. We officially got back in Lansing around 11:15, and I stayed till about around a little bit past midnight in the office.
Ooh, so, late night. Yeah, that one concern of mine was the fact that the event went till 10. I think we got there at about 5, right?
Yeah, well, actually 4:30. 4:30. 4:15, 4:30, yeah.
Some of the inductees started filing in about 5:30.
Right.
But my issue was the inductees only had 3 minutes to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So three times, well, Jeter wasn't there. So three times five, right? Or six.
Mm-hmm.
Three times six is 18.
Right.
So 18 minutes between the speeches, yeah. But it ended up being a 4-hour ceremony.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I mean, originally when you look at the pamphlet, I mean, it was supposed to go for just an hour, I think the actual ceremony was. But they had, of course, they had to pay the bills. There were a lot of sponsors, of course, in also accompanied with this event, including Chevy and a few others. So they had to cover all their bases as far as the sponsorship goes. So I definitely understood it. But again, the inductees, I mean, they didn't start rolling in until about, because media check-in was supposed to be from 4 to 5, which it was. But the inductees really didn't start rolling in until about like 5:30. So fashionably late, though. So I really didn't have a problem with that. But it was a fun time. I think the Soundboard Theater is one incredible venue. And it was really, really cool how the setup was. And they had the Hall of Fame inductees actually rise on a platform before they were all introduced. Right in the middle of the platform was a really, really sexy Chevy Corvette. Yeah, folks, the 2015 Chevy Corvette. So they rose on the platform and fog machines and steam came out. But it was really cool. And just seeing the attention that Tom Izzo got, and you actually pointed this out, Alex, and it's something that came to my thoughts. Actually, before I started the interview with Tom, I mean, he was like a rock star. I mean, out of all the inductees there, including Barry Larkin, folks. Now I'm sure you know Derek Jeter. That would have garnered a lot of attention. But even Sergei Fedorov. I mean, nobody out of everybody last night garnered more attention than Tom Izzo. I mean, everybody, you know, he's getting things thrown in his face and he's signing autographs. And you know, Tom, he's such a nice guy. He does it so gracefully. He just puts on a smile. He signed everything. He's shaking different hands and talking to everybody that he can. And we got a lot of cool shots of that moment. But it was just really, really so cool how, and you talked about it, Alex, how, you know, yesterday after the ceremony, you brought it up how just about everybody who took the podium for that 3-minute speech acknowledged Tom Izzo and how great he was. And I thought that was just so, so cool. That was one of the biggest moments for me. What about you?
Yeah, we learned a couple things. We also learned that Sergei Fedorov, those of you who remember him from the Red Wings, flew in all the way from Russia, and in his speech, he talked about how the Iliches threw him a Corvette when he signed with the Red Wings.
Yeah.
You remember that, Al?
Nice, nice gift.
So apparently, yeah. Fedorov got a Corvette as a little signing bonus on the side.
Yeah, really cool stuff.
We also learned that Barry Larkin was recruited by Bo Schembechler to play football, and Bo got very upset when he chose to play baseball.
Right.
We learned that between Lloyd Carr and Tom Izzo, Bo Schembechler wanted Tom Izzo and several other guys on probably Michigan State's roster. So there are some stories told from Lloyd Carr about Tom Izzo. And again, a lot of the stories circle around Izzo. And everyone had to pay respect to the fact that coaching makes good players. Barry Larkin was the main proponent of that.
Yeah, and also Doug English. Yeah, Doug English as well. Yeah, because you know, Doug actually talked about that when I asked him about, as you guys just heard, in his, you know, what his speech was going to be about. It was going to be a tribute to the coaches. So, yeah, definitely. And, you know, another thing really cool, you know, about that Barry Larkin story about him being recruited by U of M football is because, you know, Barry told a really funny story that had everybody cracking up, you know, of when, you know, Barry, I guess, is, you know, one day during practice, he's out in the outfield. All of a sudden, he hears this yelling coming from third base, and it's actually Bo Schembechler yelling at Barry Larkin saying, "Hey, Why don't you come and play a man's game, a game where something can hit you back other than a baseball? So I thought that was hilarious. And you'll get to hear that. We'll post all of this online at WKUR.org as well. And also, I'll be remiss if I didn't bring up Shelia Tormenia, because, you know, I think that, you know, Shelia, an Olympic medalist, I mean, it's unbelievable how many sports she actually played. And, you know, I think we know, we give a lot of credit to the big sports here in America, like the footballs and the basketball players and hockey and so on and so forth. Basketball, of course. But, you know, it's rare when we only bring attention to Olympians every 4 years, because that's when the Olympics are held. But we rarely celebrate them in the manner that I think we should. And again, you know, Shelia, she's a Livonia native. She competed in 4 Olympics, earning gold medal as a member of the U.S. 4x200 relay team. She swam for the University of Georgia, where she was also team captain there. She's also a 4-time All-American, competed in the first Olympic triathlon. She won the 2004 ITU Triathlon World Championship. She also took up modern pentathlon, won the women's senior division at the 2005 Pan American Championship Games, and she qualified for the pentathlon in 2008 to become the first female to qualify in 3 different Olympic events. It was remarkable to see all of the sports that Shelia had participated in. It was unbelievable to see her. She was one of my favorite moments of last night. And of course, all of the other legends there that I want to mention. Chris Chelios, you brought up, of course, Lloyd Carr, Alex. Earl Croonton, who I didn't even know who he was until Fred Heumann of Channel 6 actually introduced me to Earl. Earl, of course, he was a big-time player for U of D, basketball player for U of D, who went on to have a pretty good career in the National Basketball Association. Got a chance to meet him. Of course, George Blaha was also in the house, Detroit Pistons announcer, along with Greg Kelser, former MSU great, who also was drafted by the Pistons, but also is now a broadcaster, along with George Blaha. You know, Tom Lydon from Channel 7, it was his last Hall of Fame, because him and Dan Miller hosted, Dan Miller of Channel 2 and Tom of Channel 7, those two hosted it for another year, and this was Tom's last year, because Tom has actually taken up a sports reporting job out in his hometown in Boston, so it was really cool to see him up there for the final time. And also, even the Michigan State feel to it more so, Tom Onassis, the MSU hockey coach, and Susie Merchant, the MSU women's basketball coach, were also in attendance. So what a moment it was, and I'm looking forward to seeing their new venue, which they also unveiled last night. So pretty cool stuff. Again, folks, keep it locked to WKAR.org for all of our coverage. We'll be posting it this weekend from the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame. You don't want to miss any of it. It certainly was a special time, and we were honored to be in the house. All right, folks, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about that Michigan Wolverines men's basketball game last night that actually went to overtime, but it ended in a big old L. Yeah, to Illinois. We'll talk about that game and also give you a preview of the Michigan State and Ohio State men's basketball game. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Want to shout out our winner of those Michigan State men's basketball tickets as they take on, of course, Ohio State tomorrow at the Breslin Center. Shout out to Ken Jones, my man Ken. Thanks a lot for listening and thanks a lot for calling in. You are our winner for that game. How about that? All right, folks. And hey, how about that To the Point show? Brian Williams, of course, kicked off of NBC for making up the story of when he was in, I believe, Iraq, flying in a helicopter. Said his helicopter was hit by an RPG. It was found out to be a falsified story. Rule numero uno in journalism. Come on, you got to tell the truth. Don't make up stories, folks. I think he got a slap on the wrist, to say the least, though. I think he's out for 6 months, and he will be back in action. So how about that? All right, well, we encourage you all to call in here on Current Sports. We will be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. If you want to call in, that number to call is 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We have our man Ray on line one. Ray, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Skipper, I almost gave up on the Fighting Illini last night.
You wanted to give up on them?
Yeah, I almost went to bed after. I couldn't believe that Michigan was up with seven points with 2 minutes left. And he called two timeouts, and he couldn't get the ball in, threw it up. It was just so sweet to see a 21-0 run from into the overtime and everything. I tell you, when you and Ohio State go up there next week, you got to suffocate them. You got to give them no breathing room.
Yeah,
they're not going to go to the NCAA. They're not going to go to the NIT. They're just like their football team, losers.
Yeah, of course, you know, that game, again, a 64-52 win for Illinois over the University of Michigan men's basketball team on Thursday night. And again, yeah, you brought it up, Ray. I mean, Michigan, they held a 7-point lead with 4 minutes in the game. Actually, Alex and
Two minutes left.
Yeah, well, I'm reading here. It says 4 minutes left in the game. That's what I'm seeing here.
2 minutes. I watched the game last night. It was 2 minutes.
Well, we'll double check that. Let's get our intern to double check that to see if
it was
4 minutes.
Two.
But you know, when we were driving back from that game though, and you know, I'm sitting in the car. I think Alex was snoring in the passenger seat. Alex was pretty tired on our drive back. But I had the game on. I'm listening to it as I'm driving, trying to keep myself awake because I was pretty tired as well. But listen to that game. I mean, my oh my. Michigan, again, it was in their hands. You know, when you have a 7-point lead with that amount of time left, you think they're going to close it out. But the thing about this team is they haven't been able to close out those close games in a single-digit leads with only minutes remaining in the game.
You know the three overtime games they've lost, Wisconsin and Michigan State, and then last night?
Right.
They don't. The teams don't start pounding the ball inside on them until overtime. I don't understand it. They don't have. You got to dribble drive to the hoop. They don't have anybody that can block it in there. They got that white dude in. I don't know how he's making some shots lately. He's been lucky lately. And you know, John Beilein and I wonder what he thinks. All the chocolates and hail the Vickers ink pens I give him now. You know, I guess he won't steal any more from me, will he?
Yeah, well, I tell you what, you know, U of M has been on record before, and one of the things that really glared out me was listening to an interview with Spike Albrick, point guard for Michigan, University of Michigan, not too long ago, and Spike talked about how they are tired of quote unquote moral victories because the fact that again they are an injury laden team with injuries to a lot of key components, and the fact that they are still in these games again. You talk about the close games. I mean, remember they pushed Indiana to a close game.
Yeah,
still lost that one though.
I know it.
Michigan State, they pushed Michigan State to overtime. Wisconsin, and now this one against Illinois. I mean, they are in these games, but it's just in those final closing minutes that they cannot pull things out. Now, I think it's a legitimate question. They're not making a tournament, in my opinion. I don't think it's going to take a miracle for these for John Beilein to pull out his hat and to get this team in the NCAA tournament. I think they're shooting right now for the NIT. I think, and ideally, in many regards, this is a rebuilding year for U of M because when you got guys like Max Bielfeld and Spike Albrick and Muhammad Ali Abdul Rahman, I mean, those players can play, but they aren't. They aren't superstars. Let's be honest here. It's been remarkable to see how they've been kind of pushed into areas of their games that where they need to score and become players that they haven't normally been, and they've held it down pretty well, in my opinion, Ray.
Well, so, here's my theory on them.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think the reason they're wearing down in the last 2 minutes of these games in overtime, and they're not even scoring, is that they've lost those two players and their depth. Just you know, you got to let those players. Play a lot longer, and they're wore out.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, those injuries to, of course, Derek Walton Jr. and Caris LeVert. And just imagine if Derek Walton Jr. and Caris LeVert was healthy for this team. I mean, my goodness. I mean, we may be talking about them being amongst the top-tier teams in the Big Ten Conference.
Yeah, I give John Beilein a lot of credit.
You have to,
I think
right.
He's a great coach, but I don't like him as a person. I know what he did to me.
Ah, gotcha, gotcha.
Hey, guys.
Thanks a lot, Ray. We got another caller online too right now. It's our good friend and listener of Current Sports, Mike from Saginaw. How you doing, Mike?
How you doing, my man? That's great that you went to the Hall of Fame in Detroit, man.
It was really great.
Glad you're talking about that. What I want to talk to you about in Bloomfield Hills about the coach slapping the player and then everything. Did you follow that story? You read about it or what?
No, I'm not. Alex is actually enlightened to it. Alex, you want to chime in here? Alex knows a little bit about it.
Yeah, Mike, I think you're talking about the Bloomfield Hills basketball coach that slapped his player.
Oh, yes, I did hear about that. Right. Yeah, I did hear about that, Mike.
Wanted to hear. a high school coach getting had to resign in the middle of the basketball season because of a. I know, yeah, there's incidences with players and coaches and
right.
sometimes the parents, but last year they was in the state finals even though they lost. It's kind of different to see something like that happen. But
you know, sometimes my coaches just kind of go too far. Cause I remember when because we reported that we talked about that story on our Quick Hit Headliners, and there was even a moment that was on record from I believe a parent or a fellow player that he coached with, and the player talked about how he used the word nappy when describing mm-hmm. one of the players here. He said, "Oh, nappy hair." I remember that story very vividly now, and he deserves to lose his job because there are certain lines as a professional, and no matter what your career may be, that you cannot cross. And he certainly crossed that. I mean, come on now. I mean, he's a high school basketball coach.
When I'm thinking about when you was in high school, you see other teams had coaches that was very abusive to the players?
No, I actually didn't. I mean, when I was in high school, my coach, Coach Yoach, I wonder if Coach Yoach is listening at all, but Coach Yoach is when I was at Annapolis High School playing varsity basketball. He was a tough, no-nonsense, sort of military drill type of coach. He expected you to handle yourself in a respectable manner at all times. And we had to dress up in a shirt and tie on game day. You know, he was very big on sportsmanship and playing the game the right way and respecting your teammates. He in many ways, I mean, he ran his system in many ways like a Tom Izzo. You know, I loved him to death. And, you know, and there are certain lines, again, that you don't cross no matter what your profession may be. And you know what those lines are. I mean, it's just common sense. And unfortunately for him, he kind of pushed that envelope a little too far.
All right. Now, I was going to talk to you, since we're talking about kids and youth sports,
yeah.
the Little League team out of Chicago and the players. Now,
right.
do you think how could they come to a solution on that? Because, you know, I see during the summer months, I used to umpire baseball like decades ago, and I see at the end of the season they put players on their team because they was going to tournaments and they trying to get to the state or they trying to get further in the tournaments and stuff. And I just want to know, how could they just find a system? Is it because of the travel teams and all of this? Is it just that it's just a cesspool and it's no way out? What's your take on it?
As far as
travel, sports like AAU, Little League, American Legion, those kind of baseball and basketball and travel hockey, travel sports, period. Because, I mean, we have this discussion time and time again. I'm just talking about the Little League baseball. Do you think the kids should be subjected to having their credentials stripped because of some adults always putting other kids behind the kids who always was there at the beginning? Mm-hmm. What's your
right.
take on it?
Well, I tell you what, Mike. I mean, this was a situation where you had kids who really had no idea what was taking place. They had no idea that they were, quote-unquote, breaking the rules. And, of course, you had – it's unfortunate because they're in a situation where they have adults who are in charge of making sure that all of their I's are dotted and all their T's are crossed and making sure that everything conforms to the rule book. The kids, especially that young, in youth sports, your job is to go out there, have fun, and play hard. That's what it's about. And, of course, you learn other intangibles when you're that young playing. It's not all about winning. It's about, you know, learning how to win, learning how to lose, how you know, classiness of the game, so on and so forth. As far as the politics of the game, this was a political issue in which they clearly, the adults, knew what the rules were and tampered with the rules in order to win games. It was all about winning for these parents. And that's you got to feel bad for these kids. And I believe that when you break the rules, unfortunately, the league's higher echelons are forced to enact those rules. And when you break the rules, you got to be punished. And it was found that these adults were tampering with the regional map. They expanded the map out so that they could grab a few kids to help this team win, and they got caught. And if they got caught, they have to – the right move was made here. They got to take away the championship. You know, and I got to feel for the kids. What should happen right now is the adults who made this terrible, terrible mistake and which these kids have to suffer for now, they need to have a serious reevaluation of themselves as people and sit down with them kids and fess up as to why this occurred. They need to be 100% honest. And this is a good life lesson for kids this age because this is life. life is going to happen sometimes. Sometimes life isn't fair and you got corrupt people. This just so happens where a group of young kids were placed in a very bad situation. So to answer your question, though, Mike, the right move was made. And if the rules are broken, punishment must happen.
Okay. Here's one more question. I'll let you move it along. I know Northwestern, Michigan State was blowing out Northwestern. What I want to know is, when is the time to put the reserves in the game? Also, what happened to this kid from Warren Mott? That was, he said that Michigan State was his dream school and everything. Is he still on the team or he being redshirted?
I have no idea about Warren Mott. Do you know anything about that, Alex?
I mean, it's a player that he was saying that it's Michigan State. He was going to walk on to play for Michigan State basketball program.
Mm-hmm.
And he did go to the university there. I don't see his name on the roster or whatever. Is he being redshirted or what? Because I know Tom Izzo.
Of Tom Izzo's team, Warren Mott?
Yeah.
He's
playing on Michigan State team. He went to Warren Mott last year. It was one. His name is Goins or something. G-O-I-N.
Kenny Goins. Yeah.
And I just want to know if he's still on the team or he being redshirted.
I think Kenny's being redshirted right now.
Okay, then. This is what I was saying. Is it proper for Tom Izzo to, even though they was up by 20 points and it was like 4 minutes ago, when do you let your reserves, your people who practice on your practice team or your 8, your 10 to 11 and 12 players into the game? I just take it off the air. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's to each his own in that regard, because you've seen some coaches who like to keep the gas on the pedal and they don't, you know, especially for a team like Michigan State who's had the season that it's had. I mean, anytime where you're rolling, you want to keep your guys in there to continue to build that confidence, because they have had some games where honestly they should have won, and they've had some tough losses. And they've been placed on the bubble by many basketball analysts across the board. So when you have a game in which you're blowing out an opponent like Michigan State was against Northwestern, why not keep in your starters? Because that's a game that can continue to aid their confidence. Every bit of positivity could go a long way. So I didn't fault, you know, Tom for leaving in his starters at certain moments of that game. You want to keep it could help this team in many regards, because Michigan State has not had a great season. Now let's say Michigan State has, you know, had a Kentucky type of year where they're 22-0 and they're going against a Northwestern team where they're just blowing them out. Then maybe you want to rethink things and maybe throw on your third string, you know, point guard and whatnot. I think it all has to do with the state of your team at that moment. I had no problem with it at all. I mean, hey, I'm the type of guy that, hey, if my foot's on the gas, I always give that analogy. I'm so competitive. If I'm playing my grandma in Goldfish, I'm trying to stomp on grandma's throat in Goldfish. I'm always trying to just blow her out. There's some people who feel as though that's disrespectful. You're running up the score. But, hey, stop me. Try to stop me then if you want to stop it.
The same time, again, it is good to get those players a little bit better with their skills and game experience. Yeah, you want to run up the clock, but again, you still want to make sure your other players get better. What if someone goes down?
So you had a problem with Tom Izzo's rotation against Northwestern?
Because actually, Tom Izzo did play Willamette, and guys did get in the end of the game. But instead of, I think that to not play them at all, like, and Tom Izzo did play his reserves, but I'm saying in the case where you want to keep stomping and not playing reserves at all, I think you got to play them at some point in the game. You know what I mean now?
Yeah, I don't disagree with it. I'm just telling you what I would do. You know, I don't know. I think every coach has a different mentality. You know, I'll go back to the Jimmy Johnson mentality. I don't know if you've seen the U with the 30 for 30 that was done on the U's dominance back in college football. But, you know, Jimmy Johnson had a mentality, he'd say, hey, you know, yeah, if I'm blowing you out, try to stop me then. You know what I mean? Hey, if you feel like we're running up the score, do something to stop me. I do feel that, you know, in certain instances, it's not ethical to run up the score, and I think that depends on the level of sport it is. Once you hit college and in pro sports, yo, you get at the pro level, you're getting paid millions of dollars to play the game. So if you're getting blown out, that's your problem. And in college, I mean, the level is up. You're close to that pro realm. I don't have a problem with it at that level. At the youth level, there's other intangibles that have to do more than just winning. So, yeah, I think there's a certain line there. But I think it just depends on the level. And I have, frankly, no problem with it. So, all right, folks, let's hit our second break of the show. When we come back, it's Friday. And each and every Friday, we love to reflect on the week that was in sports. Don't go anywhere. Reflection Friday is right around the corner.
Oh,
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I have to remind you all that, hey, if you missed Current Sports TV last night at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV, don't fret. Hey, you can just simply go to video.wkar.org and check the episode out. In any episode, actually, that we've done in Current Sports TV history. It was a fantastic week sitting down with Keon G., who is a 10-year-old boxing phenomenon. I mean, he was unbelievable, folks. I mean, we actually went out to Crown Boxing, me and, of course, producer Tim Elkins. We went out there to actually watch Keon in action. Man, oh, man, it was unbelievable. If you want to see the visual of that episode, again, just simply go to video.wkr.org. I sat down with Keon and also two of Keon's trainers, Ali Easley, who is a great friend of Current Sports. We've had him on before, and he's done one fantastic job. And also another key trainer for Keon by the name of Moses Manuel. It was a fantastic sit-down. Again, folks, you simply go to video.wkar.org to check out that episode and so much more. Well, it is Friday, ladies and gents, and we love to bring the a segment that we call Reflection Friday, where we take a look back and reflect on the week that was this week in sports history. So let's check it out. Here we go. All right, Reflection Friday, folks, where we bring to you our favorite moments, stories, and personnel of the sporting week. Alex, I want to start off by getting this off of my heart and off of my chest. I'm pretty sad on the eve of Valentine's Day here. I should be in a good mood, right? Love should be flowing, right? But I tell you what, my favorite athlete has been giving me low love for quite some time, and that is Tiger Eldrick Woods. Tiger Woods has decided to take a leave of absence from the game of golf because he just says that his game is not up to par, is not tour ready right now. Tiger Woods isn't the same mentally. And I tell you what, man, I've kind of dodged around this question for quite some time about just how great Tiger Woods is and whether or not we would see Tiger become the same dominant Tiger that he was during his heyday. But, you know, this is really the first time that we've seen Tiger deal with any sort of adversity. And it started with, of course, the whole girlfriend. Well, I believe it was his wife at the time. When she came out with golf clubs and started swinging at his car and his truck and whatnot. But this is the first time we've seen Tiger deal with any sort of adversity. And we've seen greats bounce back from adversity. I just don't know in a game of golf if Tiger Woods can do that because it's such a mental game. But Tiger Woods, I guess I'm starting off my Reflection Friday in a sad way, at least in my eyes. Tiger Woods taking that leave of absence. Alex?
Yeah, we'll get the sad out of the way. I have to talk about high school sports and the status of where that is right now. You heard Mike call in and talk about what happened at Bloomfield Hills High School. And for those that are listening and don't know, I am from that area and went to that high school. But before I went to that high school, the two schools in Bloomfield Hills were split. It was Andover High School and Losser High School. And they came together over the last year. And when they consolidated, they had to choose between two schools, between Andover and Losser, which coach they were going to keep and which coach they were going to get rid of. They did not keep the coach that I had at Andover. They went with the coaches that were at Losser. I unfortunately did not know any of these coaches. I did not know the player or the coach that got slapped.
Well, you mean,
that slapped this
fortunately,
player.
You didn't know these coaches.
Fortunately. That's a good point. Now, fortunately, I didn't.
Yeah.
But what I can tell you is that it is a little bit of a rough time for that school district. I know that for the students that are there, it is rough. It's a new setting. There are new personnel. There, I'm sure, are a lot of arguments. It's a tight, snug school. I mean, it's a 900-person school designed to fit 2,000. So that's a little bit tough for the players right now. But that doesn't mean anything. That's no excuse to hit a player. I feel awful for this program. And again, I mean, this is the first time Bloomfield Hills High School has been on a national stage like this. They have never really been on a national stage where they're going to a state championship. They haven't done that in years. So for them to get there and then to have this happen, the negativity does not help. And also, if you missed this, Al, there was a big brawl over the last week at a high school in Indianapolis. Two high schools, they brawled. Fans cleared the bench, coaches cleared the bench, players cleared. It was horrible. Fans were going on the court, you know, swinging punches at people. So overall, there is still violence at the high school level, and there has to be something done about it.
Yeah, sadly so, man. It reminds me of back in the day at Cody High School, man. I'll say that story for another day. Wow. All right. Well, also, I want to bring up, of course, the Little League World Series discussion that we just kind of talked about. I mean, it's very unfortunate what went down in the news that broke earlier this week concerning the committee deciding to strip away the U.S. championship for the Jackie Robinson West team. But, hey, rules are rules, and it's just another example of just adults sticking their nose and trying to corrupt the system in each and every way. It doesn't just transcend the life, folks. It also trickles down into sports. But I just really, I really feel bad for the kids, and I really hope that they're commemorated in some way, in some way. I don't know how the league can do that, but hopefully in some way, because it still was a remarkable accomplishment to see what they were able to accomplish in the Little League World Series. Also, Buster Douglas beating Mike Tyson. It was a 25th year anniversary 2 days ago for that moment. And what many consider to be the greatest upset in North American sporting history. How about that? I was actually listening to a lot of different radio shows and reading a lot of different analyst takes on it, from Mike and Mike to ESPN's First Take to even a few analysts on Fox Sports 1. And many feel as though that was the biggest upset in North American sports history, Buster Douglas knocking out Mike Tyson. But, yeah, it was the 25th year anniversary, so it was pretty cool looking back at that moment as well. Alex Rodriguez, a topic we didn't get to, but A-Rod in a 90-minute meeting at Yankee Stadium on Tuesday, he apologized to Yankees owner Hal Steinbrenner and team executives for his suspension and performance-enhancing drugs and the hostile nature in which he attempted to defend himself. Why A-Rod felt the need to do this, I have no idea. I think he's trying to cushion the blow before the baseball season starts and maybe earn some brownie points for baseball fans out there, but I think it's just kind of too late for that. And also, I got to bring up NBA All-Star Weekend, folks. It's going to be a fun one starting tonight, even though I think the All-Star Weekend is kind of depleted over the years when it comes to interest. At least in my eyes. But it's going to be kind of fun to watch the Celebrity All-Star Game tonight as comedian Kevin Hart. You got a lot of individuals like rapper Common. Even, speaking of the Little League World Series, the Little League phenom Monet Davis, she's even playing tonight. So it's going to be really, really fun. Nick Cannon, I could go on and on. That'd be fun to watch. Also, the Rising Stars Challenge, which has kind of a local feel. Former Michigan point guard Trey Burke will be playing. Detroit Pistons guard Kentavious Caldwell-Pope will be playing. Former Indiana star who I got the privilege of covering, Cody Zeller, he'll also be in that game. And, the All-Star Game will also reveal the dunk contest, three-point contest, all of that on Saturday. The dunk contest is always something to watch because it was such a big attraction back in the day. But you got Giannis Antetokounmpo, Zach LaVine, Victor Oladipo, and Mason Plumlee in that one. So we'll see if they can pull any rabbits out their hat, and reveal any dunk that we haven't seen before. But we'll see. So it should be a fun weekend. It's also Valentine's weekend, folks. Make it a good one with your loved one. Do something fun and just spend time with them, folks. It should be a good one, all right? Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to Current Sports throughout this entire week. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have a great weekend. And as always, be easy, people.